right. This is Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR 90.1. Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And I am your third Friday host, Pastor Jesse. That's what Bill Mash calls me, which is good because Bill Mash is going to be a part of our lineup today. We've got a little bit of history, a little bit of theology, and a little bit of out there on the front lines journalism with Bill Mash and our Without a Roof segment. So we don't have a whole lot of time today, so I'm just going to get right into our first interview. So my guest for this segment is Dr. Robert Cottrell, retired professor of history and American studies at Chico State. Am I right to say that you're retired, Bob?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, it seemed like
retired from the classroom.
Oh, for sure, but definitely not
retired from writing.
Well, it seemed like a lifetime ago that you were on the show, but when I look back on my notes, it was last spring because we spent some time reviewing how the current COVID pandemic related to the Spanish flu epidemic of 1918. And as I said last spring, Bob is one of my go-to guys when I need help understanding current events from a historical perspective. So he is a prolific author and has been on the show to talk about his book, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, and most recently one with Blaine Brown called 1968, The Rise and Fall of the New American Revolution. But Bob has a new book, one of two. Today I'm wanting to talk about All American Rebels, the American Left from the Wobblies today. So welcome once again to Peace and Social Justice, Bob.
Thank you, Pastor Jesse.
So I received a copy of All American Rebels this past weekend, and although I was unable to read the entire book, I did read a few chapters that piqued my interest. But here's the summary of the book from the inside of the dust jacket. It says, from women's suffrage to civil rights for African Americans to environmental advocacy and gay and lesbian liberation movement, the American left has achieved notable success in the 20th and 21st centuries. Sometimes celebrated and sometimes reviled, the left has taken on many forms and reinvented itself many times over the past century. In All American Rebels, historian Robert C. Cottrell traces the rise and fall and the ebb and flow of left-wing American movements. Following an overview of the early 20th century movements, Cottrell focuses on the 1960s to today, offering readers a concise introduction and helping them understand this political and ideological roots of the left. Now, as much as I don't like the labels right and left, it is what we have, and I accept it because at least it's a continuum. So, Bob, help me define the left as you see it.
The left, the idea of the left and the right actually comes from the seatings of delegates involving the French Revolution. Over the course of the last two-plus centuries, the left has come to stand for certain ideas and certain causes, both globally and here in the United States. In the United States, my determination is that the left has succeeded best when it highlights core democratic values. And as I see it, what the left has been about at its best is fostering both political and economic democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true whether we're harking back to early rebels and radicals, you know, from the American Revolution through the abolitionist and early feminist in the antebellum period to the radical Reconstructionist to anarchist and other labor activists and the populist at the end of the 19th century, and then into the 20th and on to today. So again, that's the main focus, and that has led the left down different paths, including some that you mentioned that are noted in that little prefatory material. So that has resulted to the present in the left focusing on the necessity of expanding human rights and people's rights.
Yes.
In a whole range, a whole array of areas that can include sexual relations, that can include economic rights, that can include voting rights, that can include the issue of war and peace, that can include rights in the workplace, and on and on.
Yeah. I appreciate the shout out to the Reverend William Barber and his Moral Monday movement. We're especially proud of him in our church because he's one of ours. He's part of the Christian Church Disciples of Christ. You were talking about the best of the left. What do you think are some of the deficits of the left as it has existed here in the United States?
Again, one of my emphases in the book is that the American left has done best when it's true to itself and to the core ideals of democracy. And when it gets away from that sensibility, then it pays the price and the country does for lacking a progressive, rational voice emanating from that side of the political and the ideological spectrum. So what I'm referring to is there have been periods throughout its history where the left, portions of it at least, have gravitated to accepting violence, accepting isms that aren't necessarily in the American vein, and that has not served it or the country well.
Right.
And I think, on the other hand, that's not been the general story of the vast majority of people who subscribe to movements and causes associated with the left. So I'm not trying to paint that kind of negative brush. But I think if you look at certain groups, when the Communist Party of the United States, when its leaders were engaged in a practice of genuflecting to Holy Mother Russia, when they went down the path of supporting terribly egregious practices and actions like the Nazi Soviet Pact, the invasion of Finland, the Stalinization of Eastern Europe, the quashing of the Hungarian Revolution in 1956, the smashing of the Prague Spring in 1968, the attempt to obliterate the Solidarity Movement in Poland, then the left suffers because of that association. More recently, a group like Weathermen engaged in practices that, again, I view as not all American, but un-American, in to use that parlance from the right. It's not a phrase that I generally love, although I clearly would associate it with what just recently transpired in the nation's capital, the storming of the Capitol building itself by a bunch of right-wing thugs and miscreants. But Weatherman adopted an approach of bringing the war home, and that included a fascination for a very brief time with the possibility of bombings, including bombings that might well have targeted at one point, American soldiers, this is in the late winter, the early spring of 1970, right before the townhouse blew up in Greenwich Village, taking with it the lives of three young activists who had started off with high ideals and devolved into weathermen.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining me, this is Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR, and I'm your Third Friday host, Jesse Kearns. And if you just tuned in, we are interviewing Dr. Robert Cottrell, retired professor of history and American studies at Chico State, retired from the classroom, yes, but definitely not retired from writing. And we're talking about his book, All American Rebels, The American Left from the Wobblies to Today. So, okay, let's steer the boat a little bit here. Since we've already mentioned the events of last week, give me your perspective on last week's act of sedition at the Capitol building in D.C., and how does this event relate to the message that you're trying to communicate in the book?
That's a very telling matter, and it's a very poignant issue, and it's quite a good question, Pastor Jesse. I think it relates in the fashion that I was alluding to just before your announcement, your latest announcement, and that is that those who assaulted that beacon of American democracy defaced it, defamed the country as a whole, devalued American ideals at their finest. And I think just as there were those on the left who were willing to skate away from democratic values at various points in time, the right has, those on the far right have been even more inclined to do that, and in a still more dangerous fashion. You can think of militia groups, you can think of Klan members, you can think of the thousands of people, most of them African Americans, who were lynched. You can think of 14-year-old Emmett Till, who was murdered after his body was all but torn apart in 1955 in Mississippi for supposedly whistling at or flirting with a young woman who happened to be white. You can think of Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman, the three young civil rights activists who were involved in Mississippi Freedom Summer, who were slaughtered in 1964 during that movement undertaking. You can think of the assassination of Dr. King by a white supremacist, and the long-running call to murder King and other progressive leaders. And we're seeing that same cry going out today. Talk of is in the air of the potential assassination of the president-elect, the vice president-elect, and the Speaker of the House, among others. This is a very, very dangerous path that is being trodden on, and it needs to be thwarted, and it needs to be thwarted immediately.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a moment to acknowledge our underwriters here at Peace and Social Justice, and we'll be right back. Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries, and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op, open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. And by Chico Velo, supporting bicycling education and advocacy since 1980. Chico Velo encourages you to ride your bicycle and park it safely at their bike valet when available at the Thursday night market and the Saturday farmers market. For more information, visit chicovelo.org and find them on Facebook. And if you're just joining us, this is Peace and Social Justice on KZFR, and I'm your Third Friday host, Jesse Kearns, and we are interviewing Robert Cottrell today and talking not only about his new book, All American Rebels, but we're also relating it to some current events that have happened in this past week, notably the act of sedition of storming the Capitol building last week. So, Bob, I got to ask you this. Were you at all surprised at that event?
Yes and no. Yes, because of the enormity of what transpired, the ease with which hundreds, if not a few thousand, people violated all sorts of legal codes, as well as basic ethicality in entering those sacred halls and engaging in the defacing of the building itself, the assault on the Capitol Police, the murder of at least one Capitol policeman. That all is stunning in the ferocity with which it unfolded and the ease with which it eventuated. What's not surprising to me, in one sense, is that it happened.
Yeah.
So yes and no. And by that I mean that this is a long path, and I alluded to, referred to, some of the previous incidents that have transpired in our history. excuse me. More recently, there was the bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City that Timothy McVeigh and other far rightists participated in, killing well over 160 people. Deliberate targeting of that building in an anti-government crusade that was taking place. And we've seen that litany continue, and at times it devolves again into literal violence. And unfortunately, what has happened more recently is that the highest occupant the occupant of the highest office in the land, the political office in this country, the President of the United States, has aided and abetted the seditionist. It's absolutely startling, and it's startling that you had 8 U.S. senators and 139 members of the House who were willing to support a literal attempt to overthrow the recent presidential election, which by all accounts was the most carefully orchestrated and most safely and securely run in our history.
Right.
That's absolutely astonishing. And again, it's not, because it fits the pattern that Mr. Trump has engaged in, and that his followers have supported the kind of activities of a undemocratic and of a violent cast.
Right. I've heard so many people talk about the president's fault in this whole debacle. And yes, I certainly agree that there's fault that can be placed on him for inciting this riot. But I wonder if he is a byproduct of something that has been building over a period of time. What do you think about that?
Yes and no, absolutely and absolutely not. I mean, I'm not trying to do a yin and yang thing, but yes, because again, as we've been talking about historically, this has been a dark vein in our history. This has coursed throughout American history, the American story. It hasn't been all light and, you know, fluffy clouds.
Right.
There's a very dark, foreboding quality that has been present. And it has only been ratcheted up by the exhortations by Mr. Trump and those of his ilk. Again, this is part of the historical record. What is most unfortunate is now you have kind of heading this movement. It is the President of the United States.
Right.
That's absolutely astonishing.
Yeah.
This is as if Father Coughlin or Joseph McCarthy or Gerald L. K. Smith had ended up, you know, in the Oval Office.
Right.
It's absolutely astonishing. And it just goes to show, you know, you don't put somebody in that position without any core values.
Right. So the next administration that is coming in is going to be facing some tough challenges. What do you think some of the biggest challenges the Biden administration and Joe Biden himself are going to be facing?
To safeguard American democracy, to put it back on track, to do something about the lack of truth that has been put forth by all kinds of media, that has been bought into by millions of Americans across this landscape, that's a tall order.
Right.
And then you have the horrible, horrific reality of this plague that has beset us and that the enormity of it, the deadliness of it, has been greatly exacerbated by the present occupant of the Oval Office.
Yeah.
Yes, we would have had deaths. Yes, a lot of people, millions, would likely have come down with COVID. But would we have reached the 400,000 level we're going to attain before Biden takes over?
Yeah.
I think not. I think not even close.
Yeah.
Also, going along with that has been the gutting of wholesale sectors, economically speaking. You can see it here in Chico. You go downtown, and we have this beautiful, small downtown area. I mean, it looks like something out of the, you know, the 1930s in mm-hmm. some ways, very picturesque. But we're also seeing a boarding up of building after building.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We're seeing a shuttering of doors. We're also seeing too many, all too many, business operators, those running business restaurants and hair salons, keeping their doors open in defiance of orders regarding COVID restriction, mm-hmm. reduced restrictions. But there are many who are suffering terribly. And again, Trump has done too little, and the Republican Party has failed to support much in the way of providing assistance, not only to Wall Street, but to Main Street. Hmm. And there's a lot on the new president-to-be's table. The United States' reputation worldwide has suffered enormously under Trump. There's going to be a need to patch back together relations of the sort that never should have had to be patched back together, including with our strongest allies. There's a need to address, you know, a rising China and a lawless Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, what the present administration has recently done is to try and place Cuba back into a black box.
That's,
I mean, it's just stunning.
Yeah.
The inanity of it all, the idiocy.
Yeah. Well, Bob, I'm afraid that we are running out of time. I always appreciate your insight. In a brief word, I always got to, I live in the solution and not just the problem. Do you have a word of hope for our listeners?
I think there is hope to be glommed onto. I think that the new administration is going to be exciting. I think the new cabinet is clearly going to be the most diverse, but also incredibly well accomplished. The simple reality that Kamala Harris is going to be the Vice President of the United States is absolutely, completely thrilling to me.
Yeah.
Now, I have to say, I initially supported her run for the presidency, so when Biden chose her as his running mate, I was, as you can imagine, elated.
Yes.
But to have a Justice Department under Garland instead of the cast of characters who have been in there.
On and off throughout the years.
To have the environment and transportation in the hands of public servants like Mayor Pete.
Yeah.
Absolutely thrilling.
Yeah.
And I think that the citizen activism that has taken hold over the last 20 plus years, from the battle against WTO through Occupy Wall Street to Black Lives Matter,
yeah.
Pink Code, more recently Extinction Rebellion, the Sunrise Movement,
yeah.
Dr. Barber's Moral Mondays.
Yes.
I think all of those engender great hope.
Thank you so much. Well, Bob, I'm glad that you left us with a word of hope today. Again, I appreciate you being on the show. Thank you for joining us on Peace and Justice.
Thank you, Pastor Jeffrey.
And this is FM 90.1 KZFR, Chico listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And this is Peace and Social Justice. I'm your third Friday host, Jesse Kearns, or Pastor Jesse, as Bill Mash likes to call me. I want to remind you that the opinions that are voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, its board of directors, its underwriters, or volunteers. We respect diversity here and diversity of opinion. We're kind of running short on time today, so I'm going to go right into our next interview. We've had history, now it's time for some theology. So my guest for our Faith in Common Ground segment here is Reverend Dr. LaTanya Bynum, who is the regional minister of the Christian Church Disciples of Christ in Northern California and Nevada. She is my regional minister, since I am also a clergy in the Christian Church Disciples of Christ. Dr. Bynum was a guest on the show a few years ago when we were talking about anti-racism, pro-reconciliation training. And today she's here in part because I am upset. Not with her. I'm upset because some of the things that I witnessed last week, when what was supposed to be a peaceful demonstration turned into a riot and an attempted coup of the Capitol building. There were lots of flags flying around that day when the crowd broke through the security to occupy the evacuated Senate chamber floor. And, of course, there were a lot of American flags, plenty of Trump 2020 flags, and a Confederate flag, of all things, too, you know, 156 years after the Civil War. And as offensive as that was, none of those flags really surprised me. The one that bothered me most was what a lot of folks identify as the Christian flag. And at first, I wasn't sure if that's what I really saw, because the three primary colors on that flag are red, white, and blue, and there's a lot of red, white, and blue on the Senate floor that morning. But I went back and looked at some of the video footage, and sure enough, there it was. And what that tells me, what that means to me, is there were folks who had forced their way into that building, who participated in that act, who believed they were representing the church that has been commissioned to be representatives of Jesus in the world. And, you know, I already put a lot of effort into explaining to some folks that not all Christians are alike. But the presence of that flag was, at least to me, profane and sacrilegious. So, Tony, I need your help. Am I overreacting?
No, you're not overreacting. What you're reacting to, and I certainly share your anger and dismay. You know, I turned on the TV last Wednesday because I'm a little bit of a news and political nerd, and so I expected to see a pretty spirited and at points ridiculous and other points moving debate as we watched an election that was fair and legal, let me say, get certified. And so to see the surging crowd and all these flags, particularly the Christian flag, made me kind of scratch my head. Like, what are these people doing? And what's the witness that is made by this? Who is this for? So I share your anger about a lot of issues around what happened last Wednesday, but particularly seeing again one slice of political opinion and belief, which people have an absolute right to, being used to say we speak for all of Christianity. So the Christian flag, Jesus 2020 flag, I'm here because my Lord and Savior sent me. That language is bothersome, and I think it's something we as church people are going to need to both talk about and engage with members of our churches about. So, no, you're not off base at all.
Good, thank you. Okay, so let me play the devil's advocate here. because in the Christian scriptures, there is a story of Jesus coming to Jerusalem on at least in three of the Gospels, the last week before he was put to death. And he went to the temple, and he overturned tables, and he was being critical of the established religious order there. He was being critical of what was going on in the temple of buying and selling things, and he turned tables over and was got out the whips. I've heard a lot of people say, "Well, how is this any different than Jesus cleansing the temple?"
For me, the difference, is that in all of those stories of Jesus turning over the tables and disrupting the temple was an angry reaction to the exploitation of the poor, of people coming to make their sacrifice and being sold the things they needed to be faithful at a large an inflated price. What we saw last Wednesday were people using their Christian symbols, turning over tables literally, trashing the Capitol building literally, threatening the lives of our political leaders literally, in service of, if not empire, because I don't always like using that term, but if certainly for those who are already in power. It was in service to keep someone in power who lost an election to say, we don't care what the voters said. We demand that you do the thing that the people don't want you to do, which is to declare this election null and void. And that just said so much stuff about who's privileged in this country, whose voice some people think deserve to be heard over others, who gets to decide whose votes count. And so you have this insurrection, this seditious mob running through the Capitol demanding that the current president be allowed to remain president, willing to threaten even the vice president of the United States in order to achieve that goal, with very little care for people who voted in an opposite way, and in this case, in the way that won the election in the Electoral College and in the popular vote. So it's a complete reverse. This would be like the Sadducees and Pharisees and scribes, the elite, religious elite, turning over tables because they didn't want to let poor people into the temple.
Okay. So let's go back to another thing that I was bringing up in the opening there. I find myself a lot of times apologizing, I guess. I have to distinguish that I'm not one of those Christians, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I feel bad about that because, you know, as a minister in the Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, our denomination, I feel like I am a follower of Jesus, and I recognize, and I'm not the only follower of Jesus amongst the believers, right? I have ecumenical partnership with so many other people, Lutherans, Episcopalians, even some evangelicals. But yet, here I am, and clearly a pagan here sitting next to me. But I find myself feeling uncomfortable about always having to make apologies for my faith.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that in your experience as a minister as well?
I understand, and I think I have. There's two. I'm of two minds about this, Jesse. One is when all you see of Christianity as it's represented is by far right wing evangelicals who seem to align, their faith seems to align perfectly with one particular political party that's in charge, who make these sweeping statements about other people, and whose faith almost always gets expressed in ways that are restrictive and exclusive. If that's all you see, then that's what you believe Christianity is. I'm not a part of that, and so I don't apologize for being a Christian. But I do try to say, and I haven't had a whole lot of conversations where I have to begin a sentence with, I'm not that kind of Christian. And part of it, I think, is because I grew up in a culture, African-American culture, that certainly can be critiqued, but the African-American Christian culture, I think, tends more toward what is Jesus calling us to do in terms of service and acts of compassion and acts of just being present with people. So when I think of Christian leaders, I think of Andrew Young and Martin Luther King Jr. I think of people like Prathia Wynn and the group we call the Nuns on the Bus, and Dorothea Day. Those are the Christian role models that I see. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes we just have to say, you know, I'm not that kind of Christian. Here's the kind of Christian I am. Yeah. What is painful for me is that people will see these Christian flags out on the lawn of the Capitol, see that guy, there's an image of a man who looks to be praying. He's grasping a huge cross that I guess he brought with him, or somebody brought or built on the Capitol grounds, and to see destruction, the kind of destruction that then happened, that's just what Christians do. They're always on the side of empire. We know better than that, but when it seems other people have a louder megaphone or microphone, then the issue is, how do we tell our story? And so let me just add, the other person that I look to in terms of Christian witness is William Barber.
Mm, yep. Yeah, I earlier had an interview with a professor here at Chico State who wrote a book on the history of the left as far as a movement in the country. And he had a nice big section in there on William Barber. And, of course, I had to tell him he's one of ours.
I know. Don't we love saying that?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think what I'm hearing is that there's an issue with a misrepresentation of who you are by the popular culture and media, and that's frustrating. And maybe I heard we're looking for some kind of solutions about ways that we would address this because I also, you know, as a pagan, deal with a lot of misconceptions about what that means. And how do we deal with that in the popular culture? And maybe everybody else is also feeling the same way that we're feeling.
I think that's a really good response that I'll continue to think about. You know, we're part of a movement about which we like to say we are the best kept secret. And I can't tell you how that frustrates me, because that means we have a story we're not telling, in the good and the bad, that we have a story that we're not telling. And so I think part of what we do is to tell the counter story, that there are people who follow Jesus, call themselves Christians, Jesus followers. That's, you know, you identify yourself how you feel led to identify yourself, who believe that what happened last Wednesday was wrong and dangerous and life-threatening, and have not been shy about saying so. And so I think that the way to get that counter narrative out in the kind of public mind is to is to just say so, is to be out saying so, to tell the other stories about church people giving shelter to people and giving sanctuary to people. And church folks who Sunday morning got up and talked about justice and accountability, who called the church to do some truth-telling about race and entitlement and the influence of white supremacy in society and in the church, who continue to call people to be committed to doing acts of justice and to be kind of both Micah 6:8 people who are committed to doing justice and loving kindness and walking in humility, which means I'm not always right. I don't always get it right. And maybe I have a lot to learn from listening to people who are believers and people who are not. And maybe especially people who are not sometimes, because we hear then a different point of view and perspective from other good people. In order to be a follower of, you know, the Christian version of what we call the Golden Rule, that's repeated in just about every faith group and certainly lived out among just people of goodwill and humanity, that we treat other people the way we want to be treated. I don't want any place I'm in to be a place where people are threatened physically or emotionally or spiritually. I don't want to be any place where there's a mob literally beating people to death or beating people up or smashing windows or my mom would say just being rude, just being loud, rude, and wrong. I want to be with people who understand the difference between passionate and even loud protest and desecration of a public building.
So would you say it's fair to denounce or, you know, say we are not for those behaviors that those Christians were exemplifying that day, and they do not represent all Christians as a whole?
I think that's perfectly fair. And had I been preaching Sunday, I would have done that.
Well, if you're just joining us, this is the Faith and Common Ground segment of Peace and Social Justice, and we're going to take a break here to acknowledge some of our wonderful underwriters. So then we will be right back. Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local, seasonal, and organic offerings at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts. They have vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open 7 days a week for to-go lunch and dinner orders. Find Farm Star Pizza at 2359 The Esplanade, at farmstarpizza.com on Facebook. The phone number to order is 343-2056. And by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, family-owned and operated and argued over since 1980. Reminding listeners to think for themselves, but drink with others. And please, if you enjoy this program, if you enjoy Peace and Social Justice, you can now go to kzfr.org and tip this show. I do have an announcement before we get back to our interview. The Chico's 40th annual celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. will be a virtual event held on Monday, January 18th, 2021, from 2 to 4 p.m., Chico's traditional celebration of Dr. King will be streamed online this year to safely honor Dr. King and our growing beloved community. So the program airs at 2 o'clock on Monday, January 18th. And if you want to view this video, watch on BCACTV Channel 11 on the beloved community Chico Facebook page or on BCACTV's YouTube channel. 3, 4, 5... And if you're just joining us, this is Peace and Social Justice on KZFR 90.1, people-powered community radio. And I'm your third Friday host, Pastor Jesse, as Bill Mash calls me. And this is our Faith and Common Ground segment. And I'm here with my co-host, Amber St. Clair. This is when the Christians and the pagans come together around the table, as the song says. And today we've invited Reverend Dr. LaTanya Bynum to be a part of our table. And we're talking about the events that happened on January 6th at the Capitol building and the frustration that we're experiencing right now, that faith communities, Christian, whatever, often find themselves in positions where they are questioned. We question who they represent and how they represent. So here's something, Tony, is we always want to live in the solution and not just the problem. And it would be easy for us to sit here and keep on denouncing the problem and making a list of all the things that are wrong. But one of the things, especially that Amber and I like to do on Faith and Common Ground, is live in the solution. So what kind of word of hope that would you give our listeners today?
I think two. One is, so far as we know, at least as of today, the insurrection did not prevail. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will be inaugurated on next Wednesday, on the 20th of January at noon. That, for me, is a sign of hope. And I don't say that as a political statement, although I'm happy about that politically, but as a statement of continuity, that the decision was not made by members of Congress that we can't do this, let's just go home. There's nothing more we can do. We have been defeated. That didn't happen. And for me, that's a sign of hope. The other sign of hope is, much as we heard last spring and summer during the racial unrest and reckoning that we experienced, are people saying, I never thought this would happen. I never thought I would see this happen. And so we've got to do something to make sure it doesn't happen again. And one of the solutions, I think, is just becoming aware. I have said despairingly to my partner and to others, is government not taught in school anymore? And I honestly don't know. I hope the answer to that is yes, it is, because there are a lot of people in and out of government that seem to not know how it's supposed to work. It is imperfect. It doesn't always work as it should. But to not know just the basic outlines of how a president is elected, the role of the Electoral College, the role of Congress, that we have three branches of government. I think the other thing is that I hear churches having this conversation. I hear people of faith having this conversation of what is our role? How do we take on the prophetic call to speak truth to power? And I fully get, Amber, that the church most often is part of the power to which truth has to be spoken. I understand that, and I say do it anyway. Speak truth to power. People in power need to hear and listen. To people who are hurting, and have an honest critique of communities of faith, how they have enabled oppression and how they have helped to break those chains of oppression as well.
Dr. Bynum, thank you so much for being a part of our show, giving us the time that you gave us today. I appreciate your words of wisdom. And I hope to have you on the show some other time as well.
It's my pleasure, Jesse. I'm happy to come on any time.
All right. Thank you. Well, Amber, that was definitely an enlightening and interesting interview with Dr. Bynum.
Yeah, it's really wonderful for me, as a pagan, who's overcome all my biases against Christians and overarching judgments, to be in the presence of such wonderful people such as yourselves. And I really enjoyed that opportunity. I also wanted to chime in, and I didn't know how to bring it into the middle of that conversation because she was so eloquent, that, you know, we have the Q shaman that was there, right? And there he has a lot of tattoos that the heathen community is coming out against. Heathens are another word for pagans, of certain bents, usually Nordic, Viking, etc. And they're very upset that a lot of his tattoos have been used in cultural appropriation by white supremacist groups. And they're also having the same issue that you're having. There was a pagan person who can be viewed to be not acting as a pagan would. This is not, we don't destroy people's property, etc. And we don't want that to be the all pagans are these beep beep from looks like they're missing their Burning Man outfit crazy heads. So, you know, I think that this is an important thing, that if I was asking for a call to action, I would ask that all of us refrain from making judgments on those people and applying them to the larger groups that they are so-called representing. There are bad apples in every bunch, and anyone who is being violent, destroying property, or breaking the law is not representative of everyone in that group that they may appear to represent to you.
Amen.
Amen.
And so say we all, or at least you and me say we all. All right. Thank you for joining us here at the table. We will be seeing you again for the next episode of Faith and Common Ground.
At KZFR, our job is to play, to speak, to do the things that mainstream radio doesn't, to be part of the communities we serve, your community. We give a voice and provide a platform to the underserved communities in our region, communities commercial media regularly ignores. We're different and we're proud of that. We're homemade, homecrafted, homebrewed, homegrown. We come from the communities we serve and we serve the communities we come from. We're all concerned, anxious, and worried about what has been happening for the past few months. And you're not alone. Take care of your friends, family, neighbors, each other. No one is a stranger. Show kindness and compassion and take a deep, socially distanced breath. Let us never forget those who came before us to give the gift of freedom, the right to vote, and to pursue our definition of happiness. Stand up for love. From 90.1 KZFR, Chico, California.
Well spoken. If you're just joining us, this is Peace and Social Justice here on FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And again, I want to make sure that you all are aware of the Martin Luther King Jr. Annual celebration. That is going to be a virtual event on Monday, January 18th from 2 to 4, and you can tune in on BCAC TV Channel 11 on the Beloved Community Chico Facebook page or on BCAC TV's YouTube channel. All right, so we have had some history, we've had some theology, and now let's get out on the ground. Let's get some boots on the ground. Bill Mash and I did a little bit of out there journalism on Tuesday, so let's tune into that.
Give me 2 eggs. So tomorrow I got nothing.
Do you believe that everybody should be born poor 1 week of their life? 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own beds and different. And when we get our new house, I'm going to be so happy when I have my own.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth, who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. We're here with Councilmember Scott Huber here on the Child for January.
Yeah.
So you helped organize this demonstration out here at Woodland Ave. What are you hoping to accomplish, Councilmember Huber?
Just greater public awareness of the inhumane action being taken by the majority of the city council.
Mm-hmm. You use the word inhumane. Could you kind of elaborate on that?
Sure. Anytime you throw people out of a place that you've directed them to be in the first place, mm-hmm. and give them no alternative of where to go, I mean, that fits the classic description of inhumane to me. I mean, my wife coined it perfectly. She said, you know, dogs and cats in this town receive shelter when they're homeless.
Now, did you intentionally leave out the lawful aspect of this, or would you like to comment on Martin versus Boise, which seems pretty clear to me that any jurisdiction can't be citing people for lying, sitting, and sleeping in space if they don't have enough shelter beds, and we clearly don't have enough shelter beds. Any comment on that?
Well, you know, I've seen opinions on both sides of whether that's valid or not. I tend to go along with the idea that it is valid. But to me, it's more of an ethical issue than a legal issue.
Any closing comments?
Yeah, I don't think any of the demonstrators out here think that camping in the park is a great idea. Mm-hmm. I think we all believe that public parks should be for recreating. But moving people out without giving them a place to go is unethical, regardless of where that space is that they're currently existing.
So someone that's been covering this beat a long time, I kind of look at Chico as a city or a municipality and how many park acres they have per resident. It might be the most in the country. So when I hear either city, regardless of political affiliation, Scott, on the city council that says, well, they can't be in the parks, to me it sends a message going, well, we really don't have any place for those folks to be. I mean, any elaboration on that or correction?
Yeah, it's a shell game. Yeah, you move them out of one place, and then they go to another, and then pretty soon you move them out of that place, and it's completely unbelievable that we could be pushing people into the ether. Mm-hmm. Where do they go? Into our yards, onto our streets, into our alleys, into our businesses, etc., etc., and then they go get in trouble there. So it's just a shell game. We're just pushing them around.
So the city will be less clean and more unsafe, housed and unhoused, with what we're doing today, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, just throw a bunch of marbles on the floor and see if it makes it easier to walk.
Guillermo Mash here at the KZFR studios reporting on the encampment evictions that took place in Lower Bidwell Park on the morning of January 12th. Today's Without a Roof special coverage will be broadcast in two segments. This one now, till 11:15, and the second half to close the show at 12:45 p.m. Both segments will feature on-location interviews with demonstrators, observers, and the houseless community members that were impacted by the city of Chico's eviction activities that are in full defiance of CDC guidelines set for the pandemic, while flipping a bird to the Martin versus Boise Ninth Circuit federal court decision that decided the following. We hold only that so long as there is a greater number of homeless individuals in a jurisdiction than the number of available beds in shelters, the jurisdiction cannot prosecute homeless individuals for involuntarily sitting, lying, and sleeping in public. Now let's get back to the on-location reporting from Tuesday morning, January 12th, starting with Andy Holcomb, past mayor of Chico and a practicing attorney here on People Power Radio. So I'm here at the entrance to Lower Bidwell Park off of Woodland Ave, and I'm here with past city council member and local attorney Andy Holcomb. And Andy's going to give a little bit of insights, you know, from what he knows about Martin versus Boise here for our KZFR listeners. Welcome to KZFR, Andy Holcomb.
Hi, and welcome. Thanks, Bill, and thanks for all your work on behalf of our community and the housing challenged people. Well, Boise versus Martin is a Ninth Circuit, meaning a federal case, which covers California and Idaho, maybe Nevada. Anyway, the case, it has to do with, is it constitutional or is it cruel and unusual punishment to criminalize homelessness in terms of arresting people who are camping in public? And the basic ruling of that case is that it is cruel and unusual punishment for a municipality, a city, Boise in that case, to arrest people for camping in public if there was no reasonable alternative. And reasonable alternative in that case, and this is a paraphrasing for sure, but basically means there has to be an alternate place to shelter for all people who are homeless, not just one or two. So if there's 20 beds as a reasonable alternative and you have 40 people camping out, that would be unconstitutional or cruel and unusual punishment to criminalize and arrest people for camping. So it has to be a reasonable alternative, some other place where people could be camping. If you're camping on public property, this is a camping on public property case.
But the Supreme Court didn't take this case up in, I think it was mid-December 2019, and then the pandemic hit. So Chico's not the only municipality that hasn't really taken a look at what's on their city ordinances and how they can comply with Martin versus Boise. Any comment on that?
Well, how they comply is by not violating the law. From my point of view, the law is pretty clear, and the city has been put on notice by legal aid authorities, for lack of a better word, that enforcing the current no camping ordinance as written would be a violation of Boise versus Martin, because there's no reasonable alternative. I think the city has chosen to proceed anyway, which means they're not, they are cognizant of the human element. They care more for political and narrow viewpoints on how the world should be.
So I'm out here with a group of young folks, and I really appreciate seeing the intergenerational support for letting people rest where they need to be. But I'm here with Sonia, who's out here demonstrating. What do you have to say for our KZFR listeners, Sonia?
I'd just like to say it's awesome to see so many people out here and supporting the vulnerable members of our population who are really in need of our support the most. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that we're able to find a designated place for people to live, because while they're camping out here right now, like, they are valuable members of our community, and we should be supporting them as best we can.
I was walking over to get here, and it was like an hour ago, and I'm like, man, I'm really glad I have a place to be, and I'm grateful I have a roof. What about you?
Absolutely, yeah. Every day, it's just, you know, I'm so grateful for that every day, and I just could only hope the same for other people who we're sharing our beautiful town with.
Yeah. Thank you, Sonia. What about you, sir?
Happy to be out here. As Sonia said, it's great to be supporting members of our community who don't necessarily have the access to the same privileges the rest of us do. And I think now, with COVID and everything going on, it is not the time to be making people's lives any more difficult. And if you've got a place that you're comfortable living in, staying in place, not going out and having massive interactions, that's the place you should be staying. And so I think it's a little ridiculous that we can have this shelter-in-place order and our actual city government is insisting that people get up and leave their homes and just go out into the community with no alternative. There is no alternative for these folks.
To me, they keep talking about clean and safe, but they never seem to look at the population that's out here living on the streets, because in most of the interviews, all the interviews I've done with the encampments here, people have talked about how much safer they feel with a quote-unquote somewhat sanctioned campground, knowing that they have campmates around them that can kind of intervene, especially women. Yep. That get brutalized out here. Any comments on that?
It's absolutely all about where you feel safest, and wherever you feel safest is where you should be. I think when our government and our officials are talking about a safe Chico, it's really important to think about who that safety is for, because it's certainly not for the folks who are at most risk out here in our community.
Being a woman on the street is no fun, but, you know, we got to do what we got to do. But it is scary, but, you know, we got people that to help us and watch us.
Yeah, exactly. Do you feel a lot safer in kind of a somewhat sanctioned camp here with friends all around you versus being pushed by yourself or maybe one other person, you know, in a remote area?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It happens every day in life.
Yeah, it does. So I've been telling people what the city's doing here, the Chico PD, with the guidance of city council, is making the city less clean and less safe for anyone, everyone, housed and unhoused. You got any comment on that?
Well, they really need to protect us and the city, you know, and be respectful to everybody, that because people are houseless, not homeless. We're all houseless. But where are we gonna go when they are telling us to move? A lot of people has no choice of being out here, or we have a choice of being out here, but it just all depends. But it's not right for them to tell us that we have to leave, because where we're going to go? All the homeless people have nowhere to go.
what's your situation? Do you have a place to go, and what's your plans with this action that the Chico PD is initiating this morning?
We're trying to look for housing and all that stuff, but we were going to the tours, but they were closed. Mm-hmm. But I have friends and family around here that protects us. You know, we all help each other as much as we can. It's just like we have to stick together.
That's beautiful words. I really appreciate it. Can I just get a first name only, or if you're okay with that?
Talia Metcalf.
Thank you, Talia. So, Lucianne, someone I had you on the radio last week. So if you were willing to do just like a quick little follow-up on how things are going for you today.
It's not going well at all.
It's not going well at all. Are you guys going to move, Lucianne?
They're coming to bulldoze everything. Yeah. I don't know where to move to. I'm going to City Depot or something. Like that. I don't know. As long as I'm in a public place.
You can be in public.
And I'm not camping. There's like 500 miles back there. It takes people.
Down by 1 mile?
Yeah, the horseshoe pit and the baseball field. And 12 tables. Yeah, a whole bunch of them.
Juan, I know you're from Mutual Aid. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing you guys are doing out here. But you were kind of a direct observer on what happened over there by the horseshoe pit and the 12 table?
So I was a little bit late to the action. They started before. But what I got to observe was a lot of city workers and yellow vests, a big leaf picker, not a bulldozer, but one of those big leaf pickers, and they're just piling up things and picking them up, putting them into dump trucks. But like I said, it does seem like they're not moving people that are there right now, and that they are claiming things. They are giving them time to move their things. Obviously, if they're not moved, you know, soon they will be cited or arrested or whatever.
I think there's a lot of dynamics going on, Juan, because the cops are on the record several times saying they'd rather people do it voluntarily, because if they do it voluntarily, they're kind of skirting Martin versus Boise in any potential lawsuit. Any comment on that?
Yeah, it also seems like they are citing people for anything but camping, like littering, having a dog off leash, and it seems like they're trying to skirt the issue of citing people for camping because they know that that's been proven unconstitutional.
Bill Mash, is this press?
Are you? Yeah, press.
So press has to go through the chief. Now, if you're out here and I'm answering questions,
okay.
But as far as the voice of the police department, it's got to go through the chief.
Sue Hildebrand, it's always nice to see you out and about. Can you give a little insight as well on what you got from your takeaway from the conversation with Sandoval about what they did here today at 1 Mile Horseshoe Pit and further down?
Sergeant Sandoval was talking to a group of people answering their questions, and I asked him, for one, if police department was in coordination with the city manager's office, and he said yes, they are working very closely together. When I asked where people were going, he said that he didn't know and that the city was not in the business of telling people where to go. They just couldn't camp in the park, so I asked where could they camp? And he essentially, as far as I could tell, the city is saying that people can sleep on the sidewalk with bedding and a pillow, but they are not allowed to have a tent and they can't have any personal effects. But in the morning, they have to get up because then they would be violating the sit-lie law. Mm-hmm. So it seems that the city will only allow people to sleep on sidewalks, but they can't actually stabilize anywhere. And of course, there's no sanctioned campground and there are no shelter beds available at this time.
Mm-hmm. That last interview was Sue Hildebrand reporting for the Butte Report, airing Thursdays at 5 p.m. on your community radio station, KZFR 90.1 FM. Stay tuned at 12:45 p.m. today for the second half of today's Without a Roof special segment on the eviction action against the houseless community on Tuesday, January 12th, including on-location interviews by peace and social justice host Pastor Jesse here on People Powered Radio.
And this is People Powered Radio, and I am the host of Peace and Social Justice. And Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Quicksilver Courier Service, established in 2010. Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Quicksilver provides courier service for private individuals as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality 24/7 delivery service. And by the MLK Unity Group, presenting a dynamic virtual event, Restoration, Reconciliation, and Resilience. This inspiring celebration of Dr. King's legacy and vision for beloved community is relevant to our turbulent and transformational times. The event airs on Monday, January 18th at 2 o'clock. View it on BCAC TV, Comcast Channel 11, the Beloved Community Chico Facebook page, or on BCAC TV's YouTube channel. Stay tuned for Playing Dead, right immediately following Peace and Social Justice. We will go right back into our Without a Roof segment.
I'm out here with the Shelter First Lady. I'm calling you the Shelter First Lady, and that's endearing. But what's your first name, ma'am?
Meg.
Meg, you know, I'm out here, I'm seeing pastors and clergy and press and just maybe, quick count, at least 3 dozen people. You know, how much does it warm your heart, or what do you feel about the support you've got from press, pastors, and local community?
I think it's terrific. I think there are people from all ages and walks of life who believe that sheltering people first is the way to go. So I'm really encouraged.
Guillermo Mash here at the KZFR Downtown Studios, reporting for the second half of today's Without a Roof segment on the houseless encampment eviction from Lower Bidwell Park the morning of Tuesday, January 12th. This report features interviews with some of the 3 dozen or so demonstrators and observers on site at the eviction action. Poignant, poignant interviews with the houseless community members affected by the city of Chico's eviction actions, and interactions between community members and the Chico Police Department. First up, Pastor Jesse interviews Charles with Hume, followed by Bob Trausch, fellow board members at Chico Housing Action Team, here on Peak Bow Radio.
So, a great opportunity to remind the neighborhood that actually shelters make neighborhoods safer.
Yeah.
There's a lot of research about this. The city has vacant land. We have nonprofits with plans. I'm currently working with a community shelter team to put together a plan for microhomes. There isn't any reason why we couldn't have a shelter for all our citizens. If this was by any other disaster, if this was an earthquake or a flood, we'd have had FEMA trailers and tents at the fairgrounds the next day. But because it's poverty, we're dragging our feet, and it's really crying shame.
I've heard some ideas about having a place where people can camp.
Right.
In one place and have some supervision and services provided there.
Right. Ed McLaughlin has offered 40 acres just this side of the airport. Steve Lottie has offered, it would require contracts and insurance, but there's 2.5 acres a little bit closer. There's the old CHP parking lot. There's the vacant parking lot of the Butte County Library. We have vacant land. We have nonprofits with plans.
So I'm here with Bob Trausch. What am I bearing witness to here, Bob?
For me, there should have been a lawsuit to stop this. There should have been a class action lawsuit to stop this, because they're not offering any place for people to go. If they had something, a place to go, motel, I don't care what it is, a campground, then I can understand this. This isn't a park. There's a mess here. But we're not giving people an alternative. And when you don't give people an alternative, you force them to break the law. And that's what's happening here. People are being forced to break the law. Not only that, these are people that don't have much money. Many of them don't have employment because of the COVID-19, the pandemic. We've had 2 fires. They're on the streets. We're taking their stuff, their livelihood. Their livelihood is a tent, sleeping bag, a few clothes, a few incidentals. We're taking that and putting it into trucks and hauling it away. How is that humane? At this point, we are not a humane community. We don't care enough about the people on the street to help them be safe and secure. What we do is we punish them. And I don't understand it. It's beyond me to understand how a society doesn't care about the least of us. It's an indication of what kind of a society we're living in at this point. And we've seen that dramatic change. We've seen it even recently with some of the things that happened in the White House. We see a change happened in our community and our country that is really frightening for me. This is, an example of how we are treating people in our community.
Is there any comment on, you know, how you feel? Are you still encamped here?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm an Indian. You gave me a reservation, and yeah, so now you're asking me to move off land that I lived on for thousands of years.
Occupied Mechoopta territory.
No, I'm Pitt River. I'm from Burney in Klamath Falls.
But is occupied Mechoopta. The Mechoopta was a tribe.
My uncle was Uncle River.
So what's your situation? Have you moved your camp? Moving your camp? What's up?
I'm probably moving my camp just so I don't have to deal with cops, because they've asked nicely. So what's wrong with being asked nicely to move?
Okay.
By the public.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, you don't want someone camped in your front yard, do you?
Mm-hmm. Now, quick question, though. I obviously don't want to know exactly where, but it seems like you're going to try to get somewhere out of sight, out of mind, maybe close to the creek, down in a, you know, someplace you can't be seen from the road?
No, I was thinking right in the middle of the road. You barely even see me when I'm here. Would you really miss me if you ran me over?
I would.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you would. But out of like 1,000 people that die, you know, just around the world, you know, from crazy things, you know, what's one person?
Would you be willing to give your first name?
Yeah, Theron.
Theron, it's nice to meet you. Good luck out here.
All right, thank you.
Bryce, nice to see you.
Yeah.
Gosh, Bryce, I can remember when I first met you like 6 years ago during a demonstration on City Hall, and you just lost your housing and you were back on the street.
Yeah.
I remember that vividly. And you're out here still. Anyway, it's a real blessing to see you, Bryce. Welcome to KZFR.
How's it going today? I just wish they'd given us any other choice. This is where they'd actually told us to come to from a previous location where we were staying. And it's just, I've been at a loss right now. They tell us to come here, the Chico Police and the Chico Park Rangers. And now we're stuck with the problem of, okay, they tell us to come here, but now the new city council has made it so that we can't stay here at all. They've increased the penalties or whatnot. So what are we left with? Nowhere to go except for out of city limits or next to a sidewalk, as they've been telling people.
What do you think you're going to do, Bryce?
I found a spot across town, but with being in and out of the hospital, it's taken everything I have to just be able to move all the stuff. I got back last night and I just collapsed.
Would you be willing to share what some of your medical issues are or how dire it is?
Oh, my heart function went down to 20% with fluid overload, and I've been in and out of the hospital 6 times recently, and just trying to get up the strength to actually haul my stuff across town to the one place I could possibly come up with to actually go is taking everything I have.
Have you thought about the possibility, and a lot of people have been looking at this, that what the city's doing illegal and they have no legal right to have you move? Have you been thinking about just staying where you're at?
I have, but I heard that they were down the way earlier talking about how a lot of people are going to go to jail this morning, and that's the last place I want to be, especially with COVID getting so rampant right now. I think there are 19 cases in there right at the second.
Yeah, and bless you, Bryce, because I remember us talking to you a little bit about Project Room Key, and as soon as you had heard that it was prioritizing COVID, you were like, hey, I need to stay well and safe. Maybe you could give a little insight on trying to stay well and safe with COVID-19 being houseless.
It's a daily challenge because you never know who out here actually has it. There actually have been a few people around this area who've caught it, and with the new variant, it's even more frightening being out here, if anymore.
It seems, Bryce, that you've actually contacted legal services in Northern California about your case, and they've kind of logged it?
Yes, I talked to the head legal aide there. He sounds like we have a case against the city, and hopefully it'll move forward. They're supposed to file an injunction today, but it doesn't look like it's been processed through yet.
Mm-hmm. Best of luck out here, Bryce.
We're going to need it.
Right up and stuck his camera right inside my tent. I said, why don't you ask me before you do that? Mm-hmm. He goes, do you want me to put that on TV? I said, why don't you ask me before you do that?
Yeah. But anyway, nice to see you. I'm sorry I don't remember your name, but I interfaced with you a lot back in the beginning of the pandemic, and I've had you on the radio several times. What's your name, sir, and tell us what happened here over here by the horseshoe pit.
My name is Richie Graves, and they came today. They gave us... 5 days ago, they gave us 72 hours to move and still didn't have any kind of a place for us to go. So everybody packed up their stuff and was pretty much leaving last night. And I stayed here today and waited for the onslaught. And yeah, it was no army really. They came. They were decent about it though. You know, I mean, they're doing their job. I understand that. They didn't take any stuff that they weren't told they could take, you know. But it's just, we still don't have any answers. We still don't know where we're going to go, what we're going to do, you know. And when the fire started, they opened up the fairgrounds for the fire people, you know. And now there's a worldwide pandemic, and we can't get any help.
What's your plans?
I'm not really sure, Bill, what I'm going to do yet. I got a couple friends that are in that safe space program. They said I could, you know, sleep on the floor or something in there for a minute. I got some friends that have houses and stuff, and I might just stay out, not in the park, obviously, but, you know, but stay out here and still be a voice for my people out here.
I'm out here with a young man. What's your name, sir?
Cameron.
Cameron, welcome to KZFR. I just gave you that flyer I'm passing out with some legal assistance here locally, and what's your situation, and what do you plan on doing today?
Well, I plan on staying here, and I don't care what the cops say, because I'll be off the street soon, so, like, this is, like, my only place that I know, you know, with family that I actually know, and she's like her. She's basically going to be staying here, too, and it's like, you know, so, yeah.
You know, we were talking a little bit about, you know, how people feel much safer in a managed camp versus being pushed into a bush or someplace that's out of sight, out of mind, particularly as a woman. Do you have any comment on that?
It's kind of what I would say. It's what the Chico PD, you know, and, you know, kicking all the women out that are, you know, that pregnant, you know, disabilities. It's wrong for what they're doing.
We know where our homeless community is at. You don't need to call me. We're already trying to do outreach with them. I don't need complaints because I know where our homeless community is at. So, but I can't tell somebody how to react.
Right. I know you can't tell somebody, but I do worry that is the next step. You know, I see that same woman online telling people, like, anytime that you see them near your home, you call it in. You call it in. You keep calling it in until PD does something about it.
So I think this is a wonderful thing today. I'm a police officer. You guys are pretty serious, passionate homeless advocates, and we're having a conversation. Why can't this be all the time? All the time. It's got to be all the time, or we're not going to get anywhere. Okay? That's all I have to say. It's got to be all the time.
The communication
aspect is, yes. Yes. It's got to be all the time. Yes. Because if it's not, I mean, I've been in this unit for 4 years, and I have not seen it progress at all in the right direction in 4 years.
Well, a big issue, though, we have is we no longer do the monthly meetings, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big issue on both ends.
That's a really good conversation.
As a matter of fact, we went to a homeless task force meeting, and this gentleman right here, Benson, at the end of the meeting, comes up to me and says, well, how are you going to solve the homeless issue? After we just had a meeting with, 30 representatives of every, you know, organization in Butte County.
I haven't seen you guys at the meetings lately, by the way.
Yeah, well, I've been.
I would really love to have some input.
Okay, I'm going to follow you guys over there.
Last audio clip was a community conversation between Sergeant Sandoval with the Chico Police Department and houseless advocates Angela McLaughlin and Benson, as recorded by Pastor Jesse on location in the Horseshoe Pit area of Bidwell Park the morning of Tuesday, January 12th. I do know that Sandoval reached out to Angela afterwards to, in my words, clear the air from what was a stressful and chaotic scene on site at the evictions, and that Angela was pleased that he did so. Sandoval reached out to me directly on location Tuesday and Wednesday for better communications between advocates and community members. I offered my view that providing far better access to reporters doing a service to our community at both the city and PD level is an absolute must if we want to move forward. I was also able to speak with a member of the press who was mentioned by a houseless community member as having been taking video without consent. They deny this, stating they were initially given permission that was retracted after the fact. That's the two sides, with the third being my direct observation of the high stress level, confusion, and managed chaos, making it a difficult coverage location. As verified on location in the 4 p.m. hour on Wednesday the 13th, the Horseshoe Pit was clear of campers, and the Chico PD target team, including Sergeant Sandoval, was on location at the entrance to Lower Bidwell Park, assisting the remaining 16 houseless campers to get into hotels that were funded by True North Housing Alliance. I also had a good conversation off the record.